Hi, everyone. I'm your host, Nick Lippis, and welcome to the Built for Trust podcast, where you get to hear from all the folks who are building and shaping AI enterprise infrastructure. Now, let's get right into it with our guests. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Built for Trust podcast. I'm Nick Lippis. We're actually going to dive into 5G and private 5G in particular on this podcast. We have the Open Innovation Lab, the 5G Open Innovation Lab, and we have Jim. And Jim, why don't you pronounce your last name so I don't embarrass myself?
No worries. It's Jim Brismitz. And thank you, Nick and Stephen, for inviting me on to today's podcast.
Excellent. Great, Jim. Welcome. And Steve Collins, you know, Steve Collins, like the ONUG CTO. Steve, say a quick hi.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. And thanks, Nick. I'm excited to be on your podcast for the first time. Thanks.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. I'm really excited to have you. And, you know, we've just been spending a lot of time on 5G and private 5G in particular, and all the iterations associated with it. We had, I think, a really good meeting in fall. In New York City, around private 5G. We had a dedicated track. And so we're planning the same thing for this year. But I think, you know, let's dive into this, because I think, you know, the more that we kind of have gone into it, I'm almost thinking the less excited I'm getting. And so let's kind of explore that. I know we have a whole bunch of kind of questions, you know, here. So Steve, why don't you start off?
Yeah. Yeah. So Jim, you know, I know you guys at the 5G Innovation Lab are all about 5G in the enterprise market. And, you know, if you think back to, let's just say, I don't know, 5 years ago, there was a lot of hype about 5G. You know, you fast forward to where we are today, it's largely a consumer market phenomenon. You know, and I think in the enterprise market, it really hasn't kind of lived up to the hype, you know, certainly not yet. So just wanted to get your thoughts on the current state of the market for enterprise 5G.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots to unpack there. The need for enterprise connectivity is strong. That's for certain. The solutions that are in market, you know, kind of vary. We have great partnerships with Ericsson and Nokia as an example, and they've taken a lot of their, you know, strong heritage and technology in the larger macro networks and are bringing, you know, managed solutions into the enterprise, and they've had various degrees of success in that. We've been very fortunate to work with six different startups that are building private 5G platforms as well, like Expedo, GXC, CubuCore, Firecell, FreedomFi, Ataya. So their list goes on. There's companies that we've worked with like Ataya that are saying, look, 5G is in the enterprise is not just about 5G. It's actually a convergence of different networks. And so we're starting to see their capabilities in both cellular, Wi-Fi, even LoRaWAN, all as a sort of singular platform. So the need for connectivity in the enterprise is strong. There's no question in my mind about that. We just finished building a private network that will support five enterprises here in the Pacific Northwest at the port of Tacoma. And their needs for coverage across the yard, for tracking trailers, for providing connectivity to their workers, for worker safety, and for other things just cannot be addressed with current Wi-Fi capabilities. Wi-Fi is great in a lot of scenarios, but when it comes to broad coverage, it just doesn't have, you know, the reach, nor is it cost effective to deploy multiple access points to support connectivity. And, you know, they've seen that play out, and we've seen this happen in the ecosystem, you know, at large. So I definitely see that there is a market. I think where the underwhelming has come in, and this is really just my perspective on the, you know, the rather limited insights that I've had in talking to a number of enterprises, I think there's what I call an impedance mismatch. In many cases, you know, cellular connectivity and cellular networking is far more complex than Wi-Fi. I think Wi-Fi is tried and tested. It's relatively turnkey for the most part in the enterprise. And the mindset that enterprises have is that cellular is kind of the same way. It's just bigger radios, let's say, or we're using licensed or unlicensed spectrum in another area that they're not familiar with. From a supplier standpoint, you're kind of bringing network capabilities that are initially targeted to the big CSPs, you know, the Verizons, AT&Ts, T-Mobiles here in the United States that serve hundreds of millions of subscribers. that level of technology and network coverage is far, far bigger than what an enterprise needs. And with that comes some complexity, obviously, and in some cases, some cost as well. So in the conversations that I've had with enterprises, the need for connectivity in certain use cases like outdoor coverage or even indoor for manufacturing and logistics and distribution, that's strong. And the limits of Wi-Fi have been met. And so they're looking at alternatives. But when they look at the alternatives, in some cases, the implementation of the cellular networks are just too complex. And then the price points, in some cases, the price points are just too far ahead. And so there's this reluctance to kind of push forward on that, because in many cases, enterprises don't want to sign up for what could be a $300,000 to $500,000 network for one or two access points, right? And in their mind, the complexity and the costs really don't pan out all that much. What we have seen at the Port of Tacoma as a more immediate example is when you provide that connectivity and you start solving some of these easier use case issues that they have, there's a thirst to do more. Many of these enterprises that we've worked with now really want to go deeper on that. So I guess I would say that private cellular networking is very much here to stay. There's a convergence happening in the marketplace. Price points around these solutions will eventually drop. And the simplicity of rolling these things out and then managing them as part of an IT stack will play out as well. And that's where I believe that cellular coverage or cellular networking rather in enterprises is almost a foregone conclusion. It's happening for certain.
Yes. Yeah, sorry, Nick. I was going to say, I agree with you there, Jim. I was actually where I was heading with just my opening remarks was I was really referring to kind of the GSMA's vision of self-driving cars and smart cities and, you know, enterprise 5G kind of in the wild, you know, enabling a whole set of futuristic use cases. And, you know, that's where I kind of feel like, you know, we're really a long ways away from kind of living up to that hype. And I think you rightly pointed out that the bright spot is you can take this 5G technology and deploy it in an enterprise network inside the premise, you know, on site and deliver real business value. Sorry, Nick.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I think this is where my mind is going, is that the 5G in the enterprise marketplace is very unique, meaning outdoor spaces, stadiums, particular manufacturing facilities that have a real latency, strict latency kind of requirement. And I'm not sure how big that market is, but I don't see a lot of the startups killing it. And so this industry has not been able to provide a general purpose solution. I think that's probably it. You know, like Wi-Fi is general purpose. It has its limitations for sure. We all know that, but there's a ton of money and a ton of companies that are in that marketplace that are constantly competing and trying to innovate to close those gaps, where we don't see the same in the 5G space. The 5G space, it has like a lot of, you know, conditions that are different because it's both public, you know, and also private. Like how much was there, like $100 billion or so spent on spectrum across AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile? It's a long time to recover that, you know, that money. And I think the consumer side of that is kind of reluctant to increase their spend, you know, on their cellular services to make that recovery, you know, quicker. And in the large enterprise, I think, Jim, you alluded to it, and I agree with it, is the complexity of that. And I think, you know, maybe there is a play where it's, okay, it's Wi-Fi, it's 5G, it's, you know, all the other kind of flavors and variations, you know, of kind of cellular. But I think like right now, what I'm seeing and is a kind of a lack of a general purpose solution. And I think there's a couple of companies that are kind of in the works that are kind of thinking of this in terms of like cloud mobile, you know, so it's like it's provide a kind of a mobile service that is cloud based and cloud delivered. But it's also hybrid. So it's both private, meaning that the dashboards and the control systems that you provide to IT are familiar to IT people, not to the service providers. So the control is in the domain of the IT and the kind of the networking departments. And trying to mask a lot of the complexity with all the various different flavors of cellular. So I think kind of the whole, there's a cloud mobile, beginning of a cloud mobile movement. I think that that's starting to happen, you know, here where 5G is one part of that. And then AI actually plays a role in here around maybe a much more efficient and better way to do spectrum allocation and load balancing. And if you're doing splicing, you know, as well. So I think it's like the innovation spark here is really around kind of cloud delivery, not cloud providers, you know, but cloud delivery mechanisms. It's AI around the lifecycle management, the orchestration, you know, of it, you know, a clean dashboard. I think that's it. And I'm not sure where the Open RAN, like the Open RAN stuff should be promising for the enterprise, because that really kind of drastically reduces the barrier of entry. But again, in there, you know, really haven't seen like a big uptake, you know, in the large enterprise marketplace. Now, yeah, you can point to like baseball stadiums, football stadiums, various different hospitals and so forth. But I think those are very, you know, they're unique industry sectors, and they're not the broad general marketplace. That's what
some of those scenarios. When you reference like stadiums, some people are confusing DAS with 5G or private 5G. And so when you get into those discussions, you really got to parse out what is DAS and what is truly private cellular. But Nick, you hit on something that's really interesting. Going back to my impedance mismatch point that I made earlier, mm-hmm. when I worked at PeopleSoft and then Oracle, I joined Oracle after Oracle acquired PeopleSoft. And they took these enterprise ERP platforms in finance and HR and supply chain and CRM, they slapped an SMB title on it, reduced some functionality and said, this is good enough for SMB. That's essentially what's kind of happening in this world. So there's two forces in the marketplace from a solution standpoint. There are up and comers, mm-hmm. and I mentioned a few of those, which we've worked with, Expedo, GXC, Ataya, Freedom Firefighter, Cell, Monogoto. And so they're coming in from that sort of angle. They have no legacy, really. They're just building net new. And then you have the incumbents who have great, deep networking experience. And they're trying to take some of that goodness and bundle it up and make it ready for the enterprise. What we have seen in hands-on POC engagements with enterprises is they treat this in their mindset very similar to Wi-Fi. And so to your point, Nick, they want to manage this like Wi-Fi. There's an impedance mismatch. The other thing is, let's say you have a successful private 5G POC and a client wants to move forward. In fact, we're working with one today that wants to move forward. There's a limited number of devices that you can actually use. Why? Because there isn't that big of a market. And so we have this sort of like hesitation in the market. It's not quite really exploded. From my standpoint, the cloud hosted piece is being done. I think Celona is a great example of that. Bicel has done cloud hosted cores. And so really just send access points. You have someone integrate them into the core, provision the SIMs. And I'm simplifying all this, obviously, but you're kind of off and running. But in the POC that we've been involved with just recently, that was one of the requirements. The client said, this is great. I've got my scanners are connected. I have no more dead zones. My employees are much more productive. Now I need to manage all this. So plug it into my IT system. And that's reality. That's what's really going to happen. So yeah, like I said, I don't see private 5G going away in the enterprise. It's a must. It's going to happen. There's just some work that has to happen in the product and solution area that will make that, Nick, to your point, appropriate for the enterprise to really get into more of a general purpose play. I definitely think O-RAN's going to play a huge role in enterprise, because they don't really have any religion around O-RAN versus non-O-RAN. What they care about is security, cost and TCO, obviously, and then simplicity. And I think in all those areas, when O-RAN hits those marks, I think you'll start to see much more broader adoption of it. In the solutions that we've been involved in, we deploy O-RAN by way of AirSpan. And we use an Expedo core in some cases, or a Druid core, or a GXC, or whomever that we've worked with in our startups. And so we're fully in on the O-RAN camp, just because it's accessible, and it's relatively cost-effective. And from a configuration standpoint, once you know your way around the platform, it's quite easy to pull together and have it stable.
Yeah. I was going to say there's a chicken and egg problem here too, right? So I think you know, if you're a new vendor, right? So a lot of startups are in this space, right? They need some level of critical mass to start, you know, getting an accessible market they can sell their products to generate the revenue, and they need to continue to be successful. And at the same token, the enterprises are kind of waiting for the market to mature so that they can adopt the technology. So it's like anything, you just got to get the kind of the snowball rolling here. And then, you know, the market starts to build itself over time. And I think we're really seeing that in the private 5G space. I have got full confidence that private 5G is on a really good path to success.
Yeah.
What I was referring to up front, though, is on the enterprise 5G. And when I say that, I mean out into the macro network, you know, and just being able to use 5G as kind of another mode of connectivity for enterprise use cases, you know, outside of the enterprise domain. You know, we're waiting for the 5G network operators to upgrade their cores to 5G standalone. And when we get to 5G standalone is when we really get a full-fledged 5G network that can support all the kind of futuristic use cases that folks have talked about, not just high bandwidth or high throughput, but low latency, ultra high reliability. There's a whole set of requirements that kind of get built into those use cases. And we're just not there yet. It's just a big lift for the operators to get from where they are today with LTE cores to moving to a 5G native core.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, this kind of like reminds me of, I have two thoughts. You know, first of all, I think this industry is somewhat of an echo chamber, you know, meaning that, you know, they all focus on those particular industry verticals where they either want to do market creation, try to like create market adoption. They're seeing some requirements that aren't being addressed by existing technologies. And I think that they don't have a lot of input from the consumer, let's put it that way. You know, it's like maybe in those particular areas. So I think they tend to kind of talk to themselves without really taking in the voice and the concerns and the use case and the requirements of a broader general enterprise marketplace. I think, you know, that's what it seems like, you know, to me.
And yeah, if you're referring to the industry by way of like the network equipment providers and the CSPs going into an enterprise discussion, you're absolutely correct. Again, small sample size. When I've been involved in enterprise conversations where I'd led with the use case and the network is secondary, almost always it's winning. Almost always. Because the use case is what's driving the client on the pain point that they have so specifically that they'll buy that use case and the network just becomes part of it.
Yeah.
When you walk in with a networking conversation, it's kind of like, hey, you run a Ferrari? It's like, I don't know if I need a Ferrari. My Pinto seems to be working really well. But if you walk into the conversation saying, I know
that's a big gap.
I know.
I've owned both of those cars. I've owned a Pinto and I've owned a Ferrari. That's a big gap. I saw
a Pinto in suits yesterday. It's still stuck in my mind. Anyhow, but when you walk in with that networking level conversation, it's a harder sell because of the complexity and the cost and everything else. But I've been in conversations with enterprises where when you solve that real problem, it's kind of like the cloud. And this is where I kind of get frustrated with the CSP world. But you don't have to learn net new lessons. The lessons have been learned in the cloud era, right? When we were at Microsoft, and I was there for almost 14 years, when we led with a cloud conversation, it was a bit of a harder uphill challenge because in many cases, many of these enterprises have virtualized their workloads and they're quite happy running on a virtualized platform in their own data centers and so on and so forth. So we had to shift more to a solutions discussion where we brought more advanced capabilities that were easier to spin up in the cloud than it was to run in-house. And that's how we at Microsoft eventually got the enterprise more and more into the cloud over time. You led with solution conversations and the cloud just kind of came with the solution. It's a much easier discussion longer term. And so when a traditional ecosystem player in the CSP world, whether you're a network provider or a CSP or, you know, someone in that world walks in with a networking level conversation, it's kind of like, I don't have a problem or an acute enough problem to go solve that problem just yet. And then the other big question is, what do I do with this network when I have it? But when you walk in with a, hey, I can go help you solve that problem that's costing you $100,000 a year every year. And here's the solution. And by the way, with that comes with this network. And when you have this network, there's so many other things you can do with it. That's when the lights go on. And it's a much easier conversation to have. So we almost never really lead with a networking discussion. We always lead with how can we solve any particular problem? And we use the alumni that we worked with as a way to go solve those problems, including our partners. And that's almost a win almost every time with the solution.
Well, right? Then you're selling to a different audience, right? So you're selling to a either a business manager or someone within the business that has a problem that maybe isn't being addressed. But I think what happens, like in the networking industry, which is a little bit different than in enterprise software, is that at the end of the day, it's the networking folks are going to say yes or no. You know, they're either going to be heads going up and down, or they're going back and forth. And I think they'll look at it from a lifecycle management kind of point of view. And they might, if they're not comfortable with it, you know, and it, they don't kind of see a path, you know, for it, then I think, you know, that top-down approach, which makes a lot of sense, Jim, there's no doubt about that. But that top-down approach will find resistance, you know, if the networking teams are not part of that process. They're not just going to say, okay, great, we'll do this. You know, it's like,
Absolutely. I actually wanted to make a comment about that, because there's obviously keen focus on, let's say, a half a dozen industry verticals for private 5G, right? And you've got all the leading vendors, from the biggest players right down to the newest startups, are keenly focused on transportation, shipping ports, airports, you know, warehouses, factory floors, you know, kind of the usual suspects, right? And I think that's great. And that's a great way to get the market started. But, you know, as Nick points out, if the technology is really going to be adopted kind of by mainstream, you know, corporate enterprises, you know, there has to be an effort to bring those folks along, because as Nick said, you know, they're not just going to take whatever comes in with that kind of vertical solution. Because, you know, the analogy I use is there's in a Mount Everest of technical debt out there that has been brought into IT environments, you know, kind of under the guise of, you know, here's a solution that solves a business problem, but it dragged in all kinds of technology that, you know, either didn't work or became obsolete or was just really non-optimal in the long run. And that's what the enterprise networking people are getting pretty good at, kind of sussing out in advance, right? They can look at something and go, yeah, that's got legs, that'll fly. We can, you know, we can put that in and run that in the network for the next 5 years, versus, I don't know, that looks a little shaky, not so sure about that company, you know, or their technology. So there's an element of, you know, market development here, I think, amongst those who play in the 5G community, to kind of bring those enterprise networkers along. And don't just assume, hey, I got the, you know, I've got the use case, so therefore this is all going to happen. In fact, I'd argue that may be an impediment to selling today, even if it is a slam dunk use case. If the networking team doesn't buy into it, it's not going to get sold.
It's like, it's almost like they might feel like you're going over their head and they're trying to do an end around, you know?
Yeah. And they have the scars to prove, you know, why you don't want to go over their head and do the end around, you know, this is all the stuff they've learned over the last 20 plus years as enterprise networkers, right?
Yeah. If it doesn't integrate, if they can't see a path of how I integrate this into like my lifecycle management and into my operation centers, it ain't going to happen. You know, they're not going to all of a sudden like dedicate, you know, something new, unless like this is the business. Like, you know, like the stadium is a good example of that. Okay. That is the business, you know, but in the general purpose large enterprise, where you have like, you know, like you look at GE, they have 10,000 applications. You look at Citigroup, they probably have pretty close to that. You know, you're not going to find the one killer application that's going to kind of all of a sudden disrupt the entire stack, you know. So right. I think that's, you know, a little bit of a, you know, kind of the disparity. And maybe, Jim, that's where we're kind of coming from. You know, it's like, you know, frankly, I was really bullish and really excited about, I think, the private 5G space, because we're hearing it from our board members, like, okay, yeah, you know, it's like kind of with EEPROMs, you know, coming into like laptop devices and, you know, and into, you know, kind of the new iPhones and Android devices, they were saying, okay, well, maybe there is like, you know, a play here. But I think, you know, over the last year, like, I think, you know, so they've opened up the doors, you know, say, all right, come on in. We really want to understand this, you know, marketplace. And I think, and I don't think that they were really kind of wowed, you know, with the response. So maybe, you know, and I think that they're kind of thinking that it's probably still too early, you know, for the private 5G. I think that's my take. Unless I'm misreading that, you know.
Well, I think there's that perception, but I do think one area that they're overlooking is sort of the neutral host scenario. you know, because everybody knows when you have a mobile phone and you go into a large building, especially get into deep inside a large building, your cell phone signal, really fades. And, the way they've worked around those things to date has been with these distributed antenna systems. Right. And there's a whole, value chain built around DAS, right, in terms of the way those get sold into buildings these days. But ultimately, kind of a private cellular solution is a much better approach in the long run. And it's something that, a whole swath of mainstream enterprises could adopt. I mean, anybody that's in a big skyscraper in a dense urban environment, or even just a large building that could be out in the middle of nowhere, having good in-building coverage that's provided in a neutral host fashion. And by that, I mean that network can support any, cellular user roaming onto that network as if they were on their AT&T and Verizon or T-Mobile network. I think there's a real play there, but again, the market's not putting a lot of effort into bringing the enterprise, community along with respect to a neutral host. And I think that's another mistake, because I think it solves a ton of problems and it could provide that kind of broad-based adoption of enterprise 5G that I think there's a real need for. And it's just outside of just those select half dozen golden vertical markets. Sorry, Jim.
Yeah, no, you reference a great point. I think, the future success of Meta and their whole MoCA network setup that they have publicly, stated they're building into all of their campuses will prove itself valuable in the next few years to come. Stephen, that's a good point. I got to say though, guys, because I'm in the trenches and I'm speaking to enterprises, there's, again, the opportunity is there. It's just the way it's positioned. Plus the ecosystem and everything else isn't really caught up yet. We at the Port of Tacoma have now deployed a private network. One of our clients spent well over $100,000 on access points with very limited coverage in the yard. And now we've got a network that range with better performance, latency, and all the other fun stuff. So from that standpoint, mind blown. We spoke to a professional services firm that's working with a large retailer, and they went and evaluated deploying a cloud-hosted private 5G solution from one of the big hyperscalers and worked out that it was way more expensive. So they elected to go buy iPhones and then go buy SIM cards from a CSP, and that was cheaper long run. Crazy, right? If you think about it, $50 a month per phone, and I think they had like 1,000 phones or something like that. So it's, you see all of this, and then we have our hands dirty in a lot of these initiatives. And it's pretty obvious when you address the economics, when you start to really show the use case potential, lead with that first, then address the economics, and then the simplicity of that integrating into someone's IT stack, it's easier. It's a much easier conversation. Now that said, there are a lot of enterprises that for various reasons don't want to work with the telcos. They don't want to have them be their managed service providers. I don't know why. I'm not part of any of that history, but we're seeing a lot of that too. And that was an opportunity, I thought, for the CSPs to really go in and dominate. The problem there is that the CSPs go in, some of them, not all of them, they go in with these solutions. They're kind of cost prohibitive because they're kind of building on their blueprint. That is their core network blueprint. It's way too big for the enterprise. And then they also treat it like a black box. So really the enterprise is paying a high price, and all they get at the end of the month is a SIM card that they can essentially put into a device. But in terms of security and some other stuff, there's limited, reach that they have into those networks.
Yeah.
And so that,
well, maybe
this all contributes into this mismatch that I've been mentioning earlier.
Yeah. It's interesting, Jim. So one, I think what we're really just saying is that we have different views into the marketplace. Right. And I think that's all that we're saying, we see kind of the more general purpose, large enterprise, you're seeing the places where by definition there's interest, and I think, that's, I think the crux of how we, are coming to our perceptions or our perceptions are kind of leading us to our opinions. So I think, there's a couple of things that you said that I do want to, address. I'm not aware of and I'm sure that there is, but I'm not aware that there are certain folks in the large enterprise don't want to work with the service providers. And also, when we think of CSPs, we think of cloud service providers. I think you're thinking of communication service providers, right? Yeah, we usually think of telco, or like Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, and so forth. And when we think of, you know, the cloud providers, those are cloud CSPs. So anyway, I just want to make sure, you know, everyone's kind of familiar.
That CSP like with the, in your world is hyperscaler to me, and then telco in your world is a CSP to me. Yeah, but yes, let's go with telco and hyperscaler just for the sake of clarity today. Yeah.
Okay. So I don't see like, you know, the any reluctance there, you know, and I'm sure there is. You know, it's a big marketplace, a lot of people. But I think, you know, for maybe the telcos, maybe a better solution for them could be just like what they've always done with like MPLS and with, you know, other kind of managed services. And that is they basically take one of your startups that have a really good, you know, dashboard that faces the enterprise, abstracts all that stuff, you know, for them. They drop that in, you know, into the enterprise marketplace, and then they do the procurement on the service provider side, on the telco side. Now, the only problem, you know, with that, I think, is that to have a really good value on that on-prem device, that kind of like, for lack of a better term, gateway or bridge kind of device, is that it should support a large number of telcos. So the enterprise can arbitrage, you know, and that if they're not kind of locked into like one, you know, and obviously that you can do a 5-year kind of service agreement and you get volume discounts and all that stuff that could be done for the telcos to try to mitigate competition and buy, sell loyalty and so forth. All that could be in play, but I think that is the key piece that's kind of missing here, is that maybe it's the telcos that are the channel into the enterprise, since they do have reach there, and they utilize like some of the startups and others that are innovative and that understand the enterprise marketplace really well, and can provide that service for them.
Yeah, you know, there's a different definition of what private 5G is, depending on whoever you talk to in the telco industry. And I won't name names, but private 5G ranges from a network slice being masqueraded as a private 5G network, to on one spectrum, to another spectrum, which is a fully managed, as you say, Nick, built, deployed, designed by the CSP and managed using their licensed spectrum to the enterprise. And then there's a lot of initiations between that as well, like some people are calling private 5G licensed spectrum that someone can go in and basically license from a CSP, and they're calling those private networks. So enterprise cellular is going to be real. That there's no question in my mind. It's just, what's the final, you know, solution? And I don't know if it'll be one. I think it'll be.
Yeah, well, I think that's the point I wanted to make. I mean, I wrote a blog last year about this. I think one of the challenges in private 5G is one size does not fit all. You know, that's totally one of the benefits of Wi-Fi. You know, despite the fact that there's multiple vendors and they all sell different products with different features, you know, at a high level, if you squint your eyes, it all looks like it's the same thing. You know, you put the Wi-Fi access points all over your building and you got coverage. It's not as simple as that with private 5G, because you could be doing it, you know, you could be doing it in building in a carpeted environment. You could be doing it on a manufacturing floor. You could be doing it in a large warehouse. You could be doing it over a large scale, you know, outdoor campus environment. You've got different types of, you know, radios you may be deploying in different frequency bands, how you operate that network in terms of what is on-prem and what might be based in the cloud could be different. So there's a lot of moving parts. And I think that's one of the reasons it's hard to converge on, you know, a standard kind of repeatable design pattern for how to deploy a 5G network. Really what there probably will be is, you know, 3 or 4, maybe even 5 different repeatable design patterns, depending on the, you know, the operational environment you're targeting. And I think, sure, you know, we're just not there yet, which is why I think, Nick, you're saying, you know, folks like the big operators can come in and kind of play a lead role here, pulling this together. But I mean, all the big system integrators are trying to play that role as well. And even some just large equipment vendors and large cloud service providers are trying to play that role. So there's a whole bunch of folks trying to get involved in kind of leading the charge there. I think over time, the market will settle down, and probably for specific, you know, use case scenarios, there'll be sort of a traditional kind of lead player that will step up. But it may not be the same player for all the different use cases and scenarios. You know, it's just going to depend, I think, on how this plays out. So we're so early in the market, it's really hard to make these predictions. But it's very helpful for people to be aware that this is going on, though. That's why it hasn't just settled down to kind of an easy, repeatable buying decision for enterprise buyers.
Yeah, and I think the clock is ticking, frankly. You know, like they don't have infinite amount of time to get their act together and get the ecosystem like straightened out, you know, for this marketplace. The Wi-Fi market is not standing still, you know, and also we have low orbit satellite, you know, the announcement, what, last month, you know, with T-Mobile and with Starlink, you know, okay, great. Now you can text, you know, from your mobile device there, but like, that's just the beginning. And, you know, if you look at any of Elon's companies, they're kind of innovation machines. So it's like, you know, it'll be interesting. There's, you know, to me, there's a horse race that's on, and I haven't, you know, and I haven't seen the 5G community really focus on the large enterprise other than those couple of verticals where there's immediate, they can talk to the use case and they can, you know, it's sell into those markets, whether those are warehouses or stadiums or, you know, hospitals or what have you, manufacturing sites and so forth. But I think there's, you know, again, they don't have infinite amount of time here, you know, so.
I spoke to a VP of IT who called a telco here in the United States to start a conversation around a private 5G solution, and the carrier's response or the telco's response was, yeah, give me a call in 8 months. And so that's not a signal of what, you know, that the market is, but it's an example where, to your point, Nick, the market is moving forward. It may be moving at a glacier speed, but it is moving forward. What blows my mind is everyone had this big belief that 5G was going to be transformative for the carriers, and it is. And it's going to be in the enterprise, but they all kind of stuck their laurels to the consumer space. And now we're 3.5 years or 4 years into this journey. That's not paying off. It will not pay off in 6G. I've had 3 5G phones myself. I'm telling you, my life has not changed. I'm not willing to spend more for bandwidth. And I think I represent most consumers out there. So it is the enterprise space. And the enterprises will spend $4.5 or $4.6 trillion a year on IT, which is encompassing of all connectivity, communications, cloud services, professional services, all that stuff, according to Gartner, right? That's almost 3 times as much as what all the carriers generate in, you know, a year, all of them globally, connecting billions of subscribers. So that is a skill set in many cases that the carriers are learning. And it's bigger, guys. It's bigger than just connectivity and MPLS circuits and SD-WAN and private 5G. It's really solutions oriented. And this is where the carriers are sort of flat-footed because they don't understand that. They've never really been surrounded by an ecosystem, which is why we built the lab, which is to create a software ecosystem around the promise and capabilities of edge and connectivity and everything else. And this is, again, going back to my story from my time at Microsoft, we understood the enterprise IT world at Microsoft. They still very much do today. They sold it through Windows Server and Exchange Server and SharePoint and all these on-prem products. And then they moved to the cloud thinking, well, Mr. and Mrs. Customer, all this stuff that you've enjoyed on-premise is now in the cloud and it's managed. Come over to the cloud. It didn't work out. And so Microsoft had to go back and think about how do we bring the cloud value as part of bigger solutions and invest in that. And look where Microsoft is today, right? A multi-trillion valued company because they took that approach. And this is where I tried to
tell them. Well, they had the pandemic. The pandemic helped them a lot.
They did, and AI is helping quite a bit now too, right? With Copilot and their collaboration with OpenAI and all the other fun stuff.
Copilot is huge.
The telco industry should not be limiting itself to just the pipe. There's lots of value in it, yes, but man, there's this broadening ecosystem around the use of that pipe that are solutions that they should be involved in because that will ultimately pull them through. I see them as a platform, no different than I see the hyperscalers as platforms as well.
Jim, I'm sorry, Nick. I what always struck me about 5G is if you kind of really dig into, you know, let's say what the GSMA is saying to promote 5G, it's literally all about enterprise. I mean, in terms of the use cases, you know, they have that triangle with enhanced mobile broadband, URLLC, and MMMTC, which is the massive IoT stuff. And then you look at all the different use cases. there are some consumer use cases in there, but the vast majority of them are all targeted at the enterprise market. Yet, when they finally went to deploy 5G, they put 5G radios up on a 4G LTE core and then sold that to consumers. I don't even have a 5G phone yet because, you know, where I live, I don't really have 5G coverage. You know, there aren't 5G towers around here. I'm like, well, you know, so, and I know I'm not missing anything yet. So, you know, there's a little bit of a strategic error there in terms of how, you know, they took this approach to 5G that didn't really shake the world to its foundations. And now we know that, you know, there's a whole lot of really great, you know, kind of application enabling technology there in the future, but we're not there yet. Right. And that's kind of, you know, and I think Nick, to your point, you know, the clock is ticking. And so, you know, I think my take on this is, you know, anytime you go to market with a new technology, you got to be really clear on your market focus, who your target market is, and make sure you're delivering the right products and solutions to, you know, make them successful in whatever it is they're trying to do. And I kind of feel like with the whole 5G thing, the industry at large kind of, you know, missed the mark, you know, and now we're in a catch up mode here. And private 5G, you know, is one of, in my view, is kind of one of the bright lights here in the 5G marketplace today. But again, even there's a fair degree of complexity and, you know, a lot of different solutions out there. And, you know, that's a lot for the, you know, the enterprise IT professional to kind of digest, right? That's just a lot for them to digest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's such a shame, you know, because Jim, you have the innovation lab, you know, and you're trying to like help facilitate, awareness and proof of concepts and demonstrate the art of the possible, you know. We have the large consumer marketplace, you know, within Onug. And so you would think like together that there would be kind of a open, warm welcome. But it's not. And I think that's like, huh.
Yeah. The telcos, they're not necessarily plumbed for this ecosystem approach. And that is not a criticism or a knock or anything. It's just part of the progression, right? But you know, like if you're a developer today and you want to go build a Hello World app, regardless of your hyperscaler, you drop your credit card, you're up and running in minutes, right? And you're touching billions of people around the world today. If you try to sell a solution through a carrier, you're guaranteed 6 to 12 months before your solution is fully activated. So the speed at which they operate is so far different. And again, that's not a criticism. It's just more, you know, you bring this to light. We've worked with 129 teams from around the world. These teams,
Jim, it's a criticism.
No, it's more of a self-reflection, right? Like when Microsoft said, "Hey, we're going to take Windows Server," and I'm sorry to go back to Microsoft, but it's my experiences, right? And it was the inspiration behind why I built the lab. But we took Windows Server at Microsoft and said, "Okay, now we're calling it Azure," and just expected there to be floodgates of demand. It doesn't work like that, right? You truly have to build an ecosystem around this, and that's exactly what, you know, we did here, was to bring more of that value to the promise of where connectivity, and we haven't even talked about edge computing, where that's going as well, all in the context of supporting the enterprise.
Yeah. I think the other thing too is that, you know, like, you know, you look at like, you know, the telecom, you know, providers, you know, it's like they spent a ton of money on spectrum. They're now competing with this CSP, the cloud service providers, who understand the applications in that ecosystem. And so they focused on the consumer, and the consumer, like you, is kind of an archetype of, like, you know, about, you know, 300 million others, you know, and that is that it's hard to kind of get them to spend more money on bandwidth and to see how that 5G is going to, like, you know, add more value to them. So you would think that they would be like all over the enterprise marketplace, you know, and you're right. The large enterprise is about a $5 trillion spend, you know? And so, I'm not sure what they're waiting for. I really don't, you know?
Well, Nick, I think one of the issues is, like I said, the full realization of 5G, you know, happens when they really start delivering these services off of a 5G standalone, you know, cloud native core, because that's going to be engineered from the ground up to
Steve, they need a crisis to really wake them up to this marketplace. You know, it's like either stock market crashes, you know, on them, their valuations like crash on them, the CSPs start to take a lot of market share, you know, from them. And then all of that kind of architectural underpinnings that you were talking about would be accelerated. You know, but I think that they really need, you know, they haven't, it seems to me that they really haven't kind of grasped the moment, you know, and like I said, I'm not sure what they're waiting for. Maybe they have to, maybe they're so large and they're so process oriented and that they need a big crisis to wake them up. That's the only thing I can think of, you know?
I don't think that's unfair, actually. I think that's actually a valid point because, you know, anytime you have a new technology initiative, you know, you can always choose to accelerate it. And by the way, all that cloud native core stuff, it's new technology for the mobile core, but none of it's new technology. It's all the same stuff that the cloud providers have been doing for 10 years and that the enterprise, you know, market's already adopting. So you could actually, you know, kick that into a higher gear if you chose to do that. And it is happening. It's not like there aren't 5G, you know, standalone cores out there in the world, but there's fewer of them out there than I think was envisioned, say, if you look back like 5 years ago. So yeah, the question I guess you're raising is, you know, what's going to provide that impetus? And you do get into this chicken and egg stuff too, because if you're waiting for all these enterprise IT folks to be paying more for all these 5G services that you're planning to deliver, but you don't have the platform to deliver those on, you are stuck in this chicken and egg mode, which, you know, you need to kind of get out of.
Oh, yeah. Just to add to your thoughts there, Nick, there was, when I started the lab, there was a ton of hype. Steven, you and I chatted a couple of years after I started the lab, but there was just a ton of hype and promise of what 5G would mean for the carriers, right? And so most all of them went all in, and in many cases doing the 5G RAN swaps and then eventually getting to standalone, then that's added considerable debt. And they're still paying, most of them were still paying for their 4G LTE capital debt as well, right? And I just did a quick Copilot search, and I just compared Microsoft and Verizon. Verizon holds about $129 billion worth of debt, Verizon, right? And so they're primarily a U.S. company serving primarily the U.S. market. They do have some assets that they in business that they do abroad in Europe as well, but they're primarily U.S. When you compare that to Microsoft's debt, Microsoft's debt on the high end is about, what is it here, $72 billion?
Yeah, and they can pay that down. Right?
Oh, yeah. Well, they have $130 billion in cash reserves. So there is a crisis.
And a $3 trillion market cap. Yeah.
Right. So do you want to continue monetizing ARPU at whatever it is, $40, $50 a SIM? Or do you want to start playing in the consumption world where, you know, that variability of demand and in the enterprise is, you know, long-term is lucrative with the right solutions. And most all of them don't want to be dumb pipes in and they saw what happened in 4G LTE. And so they wanted to use 5G as a way to change course on just being a dumb pipe and all this value going on top of their networks. Well, we're four years into this journey. I think they're still kind of there, right? And the only way you get away from that is you have to eventually evolve yourself from just being a communications provider to a true platform. And a platform, whether it's in 5G, private 5G, or an edge, is essentially you know, the way forward. That's where you start to create value via your platform and then have others build on your platform and be successful. And they're all nervous about where the hyperscalers are. Well, the hyperscalers are a platform. That's what they are. You could do literally anything you want on a hyperscaler cloud. You can't really today on a telco. Now, Kamara has the Project Kamara effort between GSMA and Linux Foundation has some promise, you know, setting up some APIs, but you want to look at that cynically. This is just the carrier's attempts or telco's attempts to do what Twilio has done for 10 plus years.
Yeah, on a cloud-based platform.
On a cloud-based platform.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, it's it, really, if I was in the telco, if I was like in the kind of CEO on the board of the telco, I'd be friggin' like, you know, I'd have the shoe banging on the desk, you know? It's like, dude, man, are you kidding me? It's like the hyperscalers or the cloud service providers, they own the developers. They can talk that story of the use case. You know, it's like, it's going to be hard for the telcos to, I think, tell that story, you know, there, because there is a kind of a credibility gap, you know, there. Also, I haven't pulled up the numbers as of late, but like this, the CSPs have also spent a ton of money on spectrum and also on network infrastructure, you know, as well. So if there's anyone who can really kind of tell that story, it's the cloud service providers. What's going for the telecom providers is that the CSPs have too much opportunity to focus on this one aspect. I think that's it. They, you know, there are too many bigger markets that they're focused on, and that is their window. That is the telco's window of opportunity. They're all chasing the AI, you know, marketplace, and you know, and the telcos. Hey, you know, you have this 5G moment of opportunity.
Yeah, and telecom networks are capital intensive, right? You're building out the underlying fiber optic transport for these networks. You know, you've got all the fixed line broadband access build out that's going on with fiber to buildings and homes. And then you've got the wireless build out. So it's very capital intensive. But, you know, if you kind of just operate at that layer, then, you know, really what you're selling is bit carriage, right? And you're not really, they're not really serving as a real platform. And I think 5G gives the operators a chance to serve as a platform as opposed to just a, you know, another mode of connectivity. So
imagine a world, guys, where you had a telco that had some edge computing capabilities and was able to expose that to a bunch of developers building Gen AI based use cases, right? Whether it's a copilot assistant type use case or an AI capability for an autonomous anything. Imagine the platform opportunities that they would have. And net new revenue that they would be exposing to on already sunk cost in CapEx. Yeah. Imagine that. You don't have to really imagine it. Here's my bigger concern is we chatted a lot about this impedance mismatch and timing challenges with private 5G, but I hope you guys agree with me that cellular is going to play a role in the IT stack at some point. How big or what have you, it's going to play a role. Now, when the industrial complex of the US GDP starts to adopt cellular in big ways, the CBRS stuff that we're doing today is nice. It's a nice little seeding, but eventually you're going to get more and more enterprises that have massive CapEx is going to, they're going to go to the FCC and ask for more spectrum.
Right.
That's going to put a pressure on the licensed spectrum that we have today at some point.
That's already happening, right?
If you play this thing forward, are you going to hold back the industrial complex of the United States because of licensed spectrum, or are you going to start to look for freeing some more of that up because it will become almost a necessity in the enterprise longer term? That's my concern. Right. And so if any of the hyperscalers show up to an FCC auction and start bidding on spectrum, it's lights out.
Honestly,
they have nearly limitless funding. They can go and outbid any carrier.
And I think to be clear, folks who are listening here, I mean, in my mind, it's not a question of if when it comes to 5G. It is the next generation of mobile technology. It's not like Wi-Fi can do what 5G does. You know, Wi-Fi within an in-building environment has some strengths, but, you know, has get outside of a building environment. You know, 5G was built for mobile network connectivity. It's well-engineered. When you get to like release 18, there's all kinds of really, you know, advanced capabilities that are being built into, you know, the network infrastructure. So it's not a question of if with 5G. However, it is a question of who's going to really capitalize on this opportunity.
That's true. Right?
And what's cellular that ecosystem going to look like? Who's really going to be driving the bus on this for, and specifically for the enterprise market? Let's set the consumer market aside.
I agree. And the only thing I would add to that, Stephen, is it doesn't matter if it's 5G or 6G or 7G. It's just cellular.
Totally agree.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. And that's how enterprises that I've spoken to, again, limited sample size, but that's how they're thinking about it. They know cellular is going to play a role in their IT stack. It's a matter of time.
Yeah. I think, you know, I know we really haven't brought in the conversation of low orbit satellite and also, in kind of the progression of Wi-Fi into this conversation as well. But it's all of these kind of mobile, cellular, wireless, you know, kind of technologies that will no doubt play a role. The question is like how big of a role, and frankly, you know, I know we've been beating up on the telcos, you know, and that was not the agenda for us to do in this, you know, but I think we're all a little frustrated, you know, with them that there's a great opportunity for them, and they're not able to kind of like see clear to kind of seize it. I think that's maybe a little bit of the frustration, and I tell you, they don't get And they got the Rodney Dangerfield, label. They don't get much respect, you know. And I think this is kind of why, it's unfortunate, because like if you think about during the pandemic, really, I think who saved the economy were the telcos. Like the cloud service providers got all the credit, but it was that bandwidth infrastructure that we had and their ability to scale that up in a real short amount of time that allowed the economy to keep operating with remote workforce. And they got no credit for that, like zero credit for it. And that's too bad. They should have. But Microsoft got the credit and Amazon and Google and
Broadband infrastructure held up. The internet backbone didn't blow up. There was enough bandwidth, connected into people's homes that you could do work from home. So I think it was a real success story in terms of, pipe level connectivity, right? Absolutely.
Yeah.
This gentleman is why I started the lab, because I have so much passion for the opportunity that the telcos have in front of them. I ran into the fire. I didn't run away from the fire. And I certainly don't want to come across critical, because I'm not. I'm in the game with these guys, and I see this opportunity. I'm just trying to help bring a software context to this opportunity, not a pipe context, because you're really good on pipes, but it's commoditized today. Right. And we're seeing this in consumer every single day. So it's this classic blue ocean versus red ocean, right? The red ocean is sharks going after each other, trying to fight for what's left in market share, versus blue ocean as you take your same product and you're bringing it into another market with some different value. And all of a sudden you're setting up yourself a new market. Right.
Right.
And this is why I feel very strongly about the opportunity for telcos. But they have to think differently about what they bring in terms of value to the marketplace. It can't just be about connectivity, right? There's so much more up the stack that they can be part of. But it requires different thinking, right? Just as it did at my time at Microsoft. We knew IT very well. We brought the cloud and we were thinking this is panacea. It's going to solve all world problems. No, it didn't work out like that. And this is Microsoft, right? You had to put effort in. You have to fundamentally change the business to support.
Yeah. And I think that's a big kind of like turn the Queen Mary around the Hudson River kind of problem, right? It's like, it's tough because it's not just new thinking, because you can think differently and you can hire people who do that. But there's like all this entrenched process and the skill sets, these revenue streams
it gets pointed out to me, Nick, often that don't forget, Jim, that telcos were regulated up to like 30, 40 years ago. And many of them still have a regulation sort of mindset in, and so from a governmental standpoint, I do think here in the United States, we're pouring, I just read this morning, millions into ORAN research, because the government wants to, get ahead of where some of the standards have been set already by China. I think, the more the government could do to help move them past the regulations space and really push them into the free market space, I think you might see a lot of that innovation really come to light. But you can't expect the carriers, the telcos, to be bigger, better, more platform oriented, but then regulate them in terms of their pricing and all these other things that are legacy from years gone by. And so there's that tension too, that unfortunately the telcos are hampered by, that the cloud providers aren't. And I think the two actually work really well together. Not a big number in this rivalry between them, but
well, regulation can be kind of the death of innovation. But not all. You have the banking industry is highly regulated. It's like they tend to innovate pretty well. And so does clearly pharma, and also healthcare. And so it doesn't regulation doesn't eat innovation for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You can still innovate there.
But absolutely. One thing that we didn't chat about is these private networks, they're not carrier networks in the sense of their data and IMS networks. These are almost always all data networks.
Right.
So that's your point, Nick. That's not true, a regulated space at all.
Right.
These are just data networks at this point. If someone needs, voice, there's plenty of teams that are doing IMS. We're working with a few of them ourselves. But these are primarily data networks, which means no holds barred at this point.
Right.
You're just going in with the data layer.
Well, and a lot of even the wide area applications, the killer applications for 5G are data applications, whether all it's self-driving cars or smart cities or virtual reality or AR, headsets and things like that. And, the funny thing is, and I keep going back to this chicken and egg thing, but you know, look, I mean, Apple just announced their headset, right? Their AR headset, very pricey kind of first generation product, but there's no doubt that product's going to find its way into enterprise use cases, right? There's no doubt. And some of those will be on-prem where you can hook that thing to Wi-Fi, but some of them are going to be out in the field where you really want to hook it to a cellular network with the right, you know, throughput and the right latency and the right level of reliability. And, you know, to me, you know, that 5G market's caught a little flat-footed right now in terms of that device exists, it's available. $5,000 is not a lot of money for a big company that could equip like a field tech with that or something like that, right? For really high-end kind of applications. And, you know, can the network really support that device today? It'd be interesting, you know, to see how that plays out. So you can't just sit around and wait for the market to come to you, right? And, you know, the most successful businesses, you know, understand that, right? They go make the market happen. They don't sit and wait for it to come to them.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So I think we're, this is probably a good time to like, you know, cut down, but I think we should do one round of what are the two things that we think that would really help promote the 5G marketplace, private 5G marketplace. That's kind of like what we've been talking about. Who wants to go first? Like,
I'll go. I mean, I think one thing that could be done is I think there should be a whole lot more talk about neutral host, because neutral host has immediate benefit for the enterprise that puts up the neutral host network and for the folks that actually use that network. So it's a kind of a win-win. It's not like you're trying to ram it down someone's throat who doesn't want it. Everybody knows when they go into a building, you lose cellular coverage, and it's really frustrating. And telling people to go on the Wi-Fi network is not the right answer, right? But if I could just roam freely in with my Verizon phone onto an in-building neutral host network, you know, it's a win for me. It's a win for the folks that put up that network. And it drives a whole lot of volume for the private 5G network market in terms of equipment, a lot of volume. So to me, that's the number one thing. And I'm just surprised that the big operators are not on the neutral host bandwagon.
Okay, number two.
Go to someone else, because I don't know what my number two is yet.
All right, Jim.
You got two? I think it's a combination. Yeah, simplicity of network adoption and operations, but also integration into existing IT stacks, I think are paramount for adoption longer term. And then apps or use cases. Those are the two big ones. Without those two, I don't see the market really taking off.
Okay. Yeah. I have two. First of all, take that marketing budget that you use for consumer 5G and apply it all towards the enterprise marketplace. Second is that before you do that is make sure that you can deliver on a range of general purpose kind of enterprise grade 5G solutions and market the heck out of it and deliver on that value that the brand is espousing. So I think those are my two.
Yeah, my second one is
you got a second one now.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, because so I think if you're selling private 5G, essentially on the supplier side, you know, whether it's software or hardware, you know, you really need to think about how you're selling to the enterprise networking folks, because that's really your customer. And it goes counter to, I think, the prevailing wisdom is no, it's the line of business guy and the OT side of the business in the manufacturing operation. He's really my customer. But the answer, I think, is, yeah, in the short run, he looks like your customer. But in the long run, he's not your customer, because in the long run, the networking folks will be running that network. They're not going to let the manufacturing people run the network. It's just not how it works. So they need to understand who their customer is in the long run, and they need to start selling to that customer. And they're not doing that today.
Okay. Awesome. Jim, I'm not sure if this is what you expected, you know, coming on board, you know, but it was really nice to have you. And, you know, likewise, it was a really great, lively discussion, you know. Steve, thanks so much for kind of pulling this whole thing together, you know, and getting this topic on the agenda as well. I think that's all we got. Everyone out there, thanks so much for plugging in and listening. And we'll talk to you all soon. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.